Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Pretty Much Done. I hope everyone packed their bags because this week we're taking a trip to Bachelor Nation. Today's guest unpacks her relationship with a secretly married man, gives us a peek behind the curtain of the Bachelor franchise, and most importantly, is also a Virgo. This episode is definitely on the heavier side, and I want to give you a heads up that we discuss mental illness and suicide later on in the hour. I'm extremely thankful for our candid conversation, and I know everyone listening will learn a lot from this one. I surely did. Without further ado, meet Marilyn Sienna. Welcome to Pretty Much Done today. I'm so excited. I have someone who had an intense time on season 25 of The Bachelor. She is a brand developer, and most importantly, she is a fellow Virgo. So Marilyn Sienna, welcome to Pretty Much Done. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you.
I am so excited to get into it. You have had quite the dating history. So let's get into it. Tell me a little bit about your relationship history.
With dating, I think so much of it stems from really your history with your dad or your mom, whatever parental love builds in the beginning. And my relationship with my dad has always been really rocky and obviously just very disjointed. And he had extramarital affairs and stuff. And so I feel like my dating history really stems from that love loss and abandonment and just confusion going through that with my dad and my mom. They had plenty of up and downs before they finally got divorced, and I was very integral in that. I was trying to warn my mom in a way, and I got really involved in their divorce, which is totally upside down for a 12 to 14, which is the age that I was dealing with.
Are you an only child?
I am the youngest one and essentially an only child because of the age gap between me and my siblings. So I was very much like their baby. I was adopted. So it was just one of those things where I was brought into a lifestyle and really wanted to maintain it. And because of that history, I think a lot of my relationships have gone into this place where I'm seeking unavailable men. And so the most impactful relationship in my 20s happened when I was 26. I met this guy that we had this whirlwind romance. It was one of those storybook romances that are too good to be true. And it was. At the time, I was working at Skybar, the Mondrian.
Really?
Have you been there?
Yeah, of course. I wonder if it's
such a hot spot. I know. It's a hot spot in LA. It's like the place to be. And of course, I was in my prime at the time. Not that I'm not, perceptively, when you're like 25, 26, you're just like, oh, I'm hot shit, because you think that you know everything.
Yeah.
You're invincible and you think you're so mature, and you're not. You think you are. And I was in a very mentally like hot shot place where I felt confident with who I was, what I was doing, and working at this kind of, I guess, celebrity hotspot. Oh my gosh, I'm with in crowd and blah, blah, blah. And so he was a customer there, and we just like that lifestyle too, to be able to afford to go there and spend money there. You have to be a certain type of guy.
I assume he's older.
He wasn't that much older than me.
Really?
He was 32.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was like, yeah, we were 6 years apart, and I thought that was like a perfect thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he just pursued me really heavily. He's an Aries.
I'm dating an Aries now. Usually they're like not shady.
Really?
Usually they're like airy. Like, no, I
don't know.
You tell me your experience. We can't slander all Aries.
And we also can't rely everything on the zodiac. Yeah. And if we do talk about astrology, there are so many other counterparts, different placements in the chart and stuff.
Yes.
Of course. And obviously psychology plays a part into it, and life experience and all that.
So where was he at? Like his situation, he's a wealthy guy. He lives in LA, has a house.
He actually lived in New York, and he was in real estate. He was doing like basically like Airbnbs, would buy properties and then rent them out and stuff, or rent properties and rent them out, like residential properties, obviously. And yeah, so he introduced me to a lifestyle that I wasn't used to. He love bombed me, first of all. And I hadn't been in that type of relationship yet. I've always been in a steady, like maybe we started out as friends and then became more. I've had my fair share of toxic relationships, but this was the first one where it felt like he painted this world for me. And coupled with the mentality that I had at the time, which was like, oh, I'm having so much fun. I feel like I'm in my prime. I'm living where I want to live. I'm doing what I want to do. I'm figuring out my shit in LA. And then coupled with the trauma from my past that was really underlying, it was just a recipe for disaster.
You mentioned that you were looking for unavailable men because of like the situation with your father. This guy's available to you. Where are the parallels there?
This is all like stuff that I discovered in the last couple years of therapy. So like they say hindsight is 20/20. For me, this is all stuff I'm realizing now. So obviously at the time, I was very unaware of it. I just felt my life was perfect. So it was like, I'm a huge believer in manifestation. But the thing is, when you're manifesting on a level that can be perceived as a little bit more superficial, and you're asking for wants without really asking, like, what can I give to the world? It was more like, I wanted my apartment. I wanted my job, bottle service. I was making a lot of money at a top spot in LA. We were making thousands of dollars and every night. It was very hard to get out of that lifestyle, being surrounded by celebrities and alcohol and parties and exclusive events and stuff. And then meeting him, there were so many things in my life that put me in a really superficial space.
Did you manifest a guy like him?
Was it? Yeah, I think so. But I was manifesting for the wrong reasons and the wrong things. And at the time, I was deceiving myself. I was manifesting from a place of trauma, as a lot of us do in our 20s. I think that's why our 20s are for growing. And all of that came to a head when our relationship became more serious. And he couldn't pretend to be this amazing person. His traumas were coming out, and so were mine. And I also don't want to play the victim entirely in this situation, because there were things that I probably did that scared him as well. I'm not saying I was perfect. Just the fact that I was in a place where I was partying a lot and drinking.
With him?
No, not actually with him. He was sober at the time. So there was a dichotomy there that was really like implicit. And then there was also, I was in bottle service. Like, you can imagine that lifestyle, going to every party, hanging out with all these people. Men are like approaching you in a different way, and you're just going with the flow. And it seems like an extension of who you are, because it's your job, and then it becomes your personal life. And then all of my friends were in bottle service. Like, all of my best friends in LA, I met them in bottle service. So we were all kind of partying. We're in our mid 20s, and he's out. He has a kid, by the way.
Did you know this?
I did.
Okay.
He told me pretty early on.
You didn't mind?
I didn't mind, but I definitely let him know I wasn't ready to step into any type of maternal role.
Okay.
So I was aware that he had this child, which kind of aids to the whole story and like the combustion. So basically, we had this really intense like love bombing thing, and he pretty much convinced me to move in, which was the first time I've ever decided to move in with a guy. Like,
how long had you guys been dating at this point?
Not that long. I think we were together for 2 months. And this is what I'm saying when it comes to love bombing. I've never been love bombed that hard ever.
Yeah.
And this guy was pursuing me like crazy.
Yeah.
In a way that I couldn't even believe.
It almost doesn't give you an opportunity to sit and reflect. You're just like in it. Like, you're literally on a roller coaster and you're like, all right, like, I'm strapped in. I'm just going to go do this. You don't even have a minute. They know how to like just get you.
You're living life in the fast lane and you think this is how it's supposed to be. I think that I wasn't really acting intentional. Now that I'm looking back, I'm like, I wasn't really intentional with a lot of what I wanted in my life. It just was like, oh, here I go. Okay, here's my person. This is easy. It's going to happen for me, because you dream of it happening from when you're a little girl. You're like, I want to get married. I want the White House with the picket fence mentality. And then so I'm like, this is easy. I love him. We're in love. This is what love's supposed to be. Everything else in the past has paled in comparison. So why wouldn't this be real?
Do you think, looking back, the things that you loved most about him was that he loved you so much?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course, there's that sense of wanting to belong to somebody and wanting to be the center of attention in somebody's world.
Yeah.
But now I'm realizing that love is not about that at all.
You grew. You grew in your 20s. Okay, so tell me about the combustion. How did this all come to a head?
So I think when we essentially tried to move in together, that was where his life started really buckling. And my expectations of him, right, became more of a reality. And he could not live up to those realities because he had an ex-wife, quote unquote.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So I'm like, he has an ex-wife. He has a child with her that's young. The child was like 2. And they just recently divorced. Okay. Divorced.
How recent did he say?
I think it was like a month before we met that divorced.
Okay. And I feel like today, like Marilyn, who's worked on herself, would be like a guy who just got divorced a month ago.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not going for that guy. Yeah.
Red flag. For sure.
But 25-year-old Marilyn's like, let's go.
Yeah. And so I was just, and I'd never dated a guy that had been divorced. I'd always dated guys that were single and didn't have kids. A lot of men are like that in LA up until they're 40. So it's rare for someone really to be divorced, have a baby, especially a baby, like maybe a son that's older, yeah, but like a baby, not really. And so when reality set in and I was expecting him to actually be like, hey, you're my live-in boyfriend, like maybe we should be communicating on a level that's more than just the bare minimum. Maybe we should be talking about like financial things. Maybe we should talk about expectations within the relationship now. Am I going to meet your son? Things like that. When those real questions started coming up in our relationship, instead of talking about them, he really turned away and went into a hole and was very depressed. And then there were pockets of vulnerability where he would confide in me about, okay, my ex-wife is wanting me to be this and she's guilting me in this way and she's doing this. And it always was like, this woman, this person is like vindicating me for being a horrible father. And blah. It was always like an external source of his pain, why he couldn't really fall into this role with me that he worked so hard for. Like he was the one pursuing me for months and months. It was like such an active pursuit that I confused as love and that he was calling love, obviously, and it wasn't. So because of that, we started fighting.
Yeah.
Like these toxic fights where it was a lot of just delusional conversation, long novels that just beating around the bush.
The long writing, the long emails.
Yeah, long texts, long emails, and like the cold shoulders and the, okay, we're not together then. And so then we weren't together, but we were living together. We had our stuff at each other's places. It was just so entangled.
Where were you guys living?
So we were living in Hollywood, but I had a studio in North Hollywood, like near Studio City.
That you kept?
That I kept.
So funny. I did like the same thing when I moved in with my ex. Yeah. I kept my place. I knew it probably subconsciously that I would not.
Because we're the same age, right?
Yeah, I'm almost 29.
So, and we're both Virgos. So I wonder if that really like aligns in our experiences in LA. Like, I wonder how much of our lives align.
Maybe.
Because of that,
I hope everyone listening, if you're listening, if you're 26 and you find yourself a love bomber, run the other way.
If you're at any age, honestly.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Love bombing is a defense mechanism for people who've been in trauma. They don't know how to love properly. So they think that it should be explosive. And as we age, we realize love is really patient. Obviously, that's a huge thing that people know, but I don't think we're aware of it because of how cliche, like love is patient, love is kind.
Yeah.
That's expressed a lot, but I think for good reason, because we grow up and we learn like love takes time.
Yeah.
It takes time to build that level of emotionality with someone.
Yeah.
And you can't love somebody right away. All of that is lust and infatuation wrapped up in a pretty little bow.
Yes.
And it's just a ticking time bomb, really.
You can really, really like someone. I think for me, like what I've learned being in a healthy relationship is like you have to feel really safe being yourself. And once you feel like you can completely be yourself, show your cards, if you're frustrated with your partner and you're able to say that and you don't feel gaslit, you feel heard, you feel understood, that's when I think you feel it's good.
And see, all these terms that we're talking about, like gaslighting, love bombing, manipulation, or healthy relationship versus toxic, it's like those things you actually learn by going to therapy, as cliche as that is, too. That's a really good bit of advice for young listeners or anyone, really. But when you're young and you're going through all that, you really need somebody professional to define those things for you and in your life. Trying to self-diagnose your like mental illness. Everyone has mental illness. And of course, it's such a stigma. But it's important to evaluate yourself, and it's okay to have mental illness. Everybody has it.
Yeah. So everybody needs the tools, I think, for sure. I think that especially if you come from a household where you saw this example, you have to retrain yourself to get out of that mentality. That's like, having an objective third party kind of teach you, this is how you should feel. It's really important. So going back to your ex, did you find out he had a real wife? Is the ex-wife the ex-wife in quotes?
So basically the combustion happened when we went into COVID, because COVID obviously, as we all can recall, begged us to ask some pretty important questions and rely on certain aspects of our life that maybe we didn't necessarily know that we needed as much, or vice versa, or whatever, let go of certain things. And so for me, it was like, I was in this relationship where I thought we were really together, but we had been going through a lot of problems. He was going to go on this trip that I really didn't want him to go on. And he did anyway. And he just didn't really consider me. And it just seemed like a blatant slap in the face, like an emotional slap in the face, where it was like, I really didn't want him to go on this trip. And he did anyway for business. And it was just like something he was getting involved with, which I didn't feel was a good business opportunity. It was just something where I was like, this is totally out of my wheelhouse. I can't even understand why someone would get involved in that. And so we were already just so on the rocks morally. And then, yeah, we just didn't talk. And I basically gave him the keys and moved out all my stuff and moved back into the studio. And that was when we got the nurse message like, hey, by the way, we're all going to die. Hey, what is this?
Yeah.
And everyone's freaking out and all these phone calls are being made between me, my mom, my friends. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? My lease was ending. Okay. Like, I had month to month anyway. And I was just like, I can't live here. I want to basically sever ties with this guy. He knows where I live. Like, he's going to come try to find me. Like, I really need to go.
That's honestly really impressive, because I feel like some people, when they got that message, they're like, fuck it, I'll just go back with my ex. I don't want to be alone during this pandemic.
Okay, right. Yeah.
So that's a healthy reaction for sure.
I think so. I think it was almost like one of those reactions that I didn't have another choice, because it wasn't really like he was trying to really make things work. And also, I think you spoke too soon on that, because he did. And I did let him back into my life a small second. He came 2 weeks before they made that announcement. And then we ended up, like, of course, having sex, and the whole ex trade thing. It was,
yes, the breakup sex is always better. I don't know why. I really don't know why.
But I think, it's just the wanting of somebody. The desire is so high.
It's them being unavailable.
Yeah, back to that. Severed ties after that, because then the communication was off again. Moved back home with my mom just to be around family. And the pandemic happens, and he sends me this long text saying, basically implying, I'm with my baby mama and my baby. Like, those are the two things that are really important to me right now. Like, back to how the pandemic begs you to find what's important to you. Mine was like my family, and his was his, which he had one.
Yeah.
But, and I wasn't a part of it. And I thought I was.
Yeah.
For like nearly 7 months.
Yeah. Did you think that he was with her the whole time? Like, you call bullshit, right? You're just, this is not.
I think throughout the whole 7 months of this whirlwind relationship, I realized, like, when he was telling me, like, oh, she's being vindictive, she wants me to be a better father, they were probably having conversations about getting back together. That's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario is he's been in it the whole time and he's a lying cheater.
Yeah.
Either way,
right,
both are bad, because I'm sure he cheated on her regardless of, right, like, because obviously they got back together, or they were the whole time. It was whatever. Yeah. But then he sent me this message, and it took me a month to process it. And then I sent him back this really, like, poignant message, basically saying, don't ever fucking contact me again. If you ever loved me at all, and if you were ever a human at all in this process, do not message me ever.
Did he
even if I message you, like, begging you, like, on my hands and knees, which I have, like, several times, have messaged him asking to talk and figure it out, because of course, I still loved him.
Yeah. It feels like maybe you didn't get closure.
Of course. And, you know, we want closure. But I said, if I do not, by any means, if you really love me, because everything that we had in my eyes was fake, I was really angry too. And I blamed him for everything in that message. And I was just like, I never, ever want to hear from you or see you again. And he has made and kept his end of the bargain.
Okay. So in the end, he's a nice guy.
No, I'm sure it was like his wife probably
caught wind of it.
I don't know. Yeah. Whatever it was, maybe he decided to play the nice guy after 7 months of cheating on his wife.
Yeah.
So it's, he's definitely married and definitely has a baby and maybe got her pregnant again. Who knows? Like, but it's so crazy to have that type of relationship and then never hear from them. That was the part that was the most jarring and really left me in a loop.
Yeah.
In a spiral.
What has your therapist, or what have you learned, like, a coping mechanism of once they, like, are completely dead to you? Like, how do you cope with that?
Oh my gosh, I am still coping with it in certain ways. But I think the beautiful part of life is, along the healing process, you have these, like, moments of realization, or, like, you have an epiphany that's really magical. and helps you on your healing journey exponentially, where you're like, wow, that epiphany today really carried me through a lot of what I've been feeling for the last 6 months. But then there are healing can also be really slow, and healing can come in small forms that are almost unnoticeable and can feel defeating because you're like, have I grown? I feel like I'm still stuck on this guy.
Yeah.
But you see it happening in these like beautiful ebbs and flows. And I think that's just the part that you have to hold on to anyone listening that's like going through this toxicity of just being so in love with someone who is unavailable, or being so in love and not knowing how to get away. I think you just have to realize it comes in waves. It's going to be okay to just focus on the things that are beautiful to you and make you happy in the moment. And they can come in big and small things from day to day. The big things will come every once in a while, and the small things happen day to day if you really look for them.
Yeah.
So I think that's like the message that I tell myself.
I like what you said about how you're like, sometimes I think, have I learned? I'm still thinking about this guy. Have I moved on? Am I getting better?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people think that, and then they just slip back. It's like going on a diet. You're like,
oh, yeah,
I'm working so hard and I don't see myself shedding the weight. But then all of a sudden, 3-4 months, whatever, a year, you're looking a little leaner and you're
yeah.
a certain weight. And you're totally. Like, oh, cool. So I think it's just keep going day by day and to get those moments, to get those little peaks that you're talking about.
I love that analogy because it's like physically tangible.
Yeah.
But another thing too that I've noticed is sometimes when you go through seeing, you know, yourself in a picture of 6 months ago that you hated, and you're like, wait, what? I look beautiful in this picture.
Yes.
That is also an important part of self-reflection. It's like, sometimes we're in a bad place. When we are in a bad place, we see ourselves in such a terrible way, emotionally and physically. And so it's just be more forgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Pivoting to the next phase of your dating journey. So we talked about this. So you said you were in COVID. Tell me how the Bachelor producers reached out to you in COVID. Because I know that you went on Matt's season during COVID.
I have two friends that are huge lovers of The Bachelor. Like, they are diehard fans. And they have watched The Bachelor, for one of my friends, a decade, she said, with her mom when it first came out. And then my other friend had been watching for a long time. And they were really into it. And they thought it was such a beautiful way to find love. And they really fell for like the storybook romance that The Bachelor provides to its millions of viewers. And so they nominated me to be on the show, like secretly thought it was really funny.
You didn't know?
I think it was one of those drunk wine nights where you're like, oh man, so hard to date during the pandemic. Fuck it. Let's just go on The Bachelor. And they're like, yeah, we're serious about this. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And then I forget about it. And then it was like, I got a call. So it was one of those things. And the call was from a producer that I actually worked with, because I dabble in modeling and acting out here, as everyone does. And it was a producer that I worked with on a different project.
Okay.
On like a drama series.
Okay.
And so she was just like, oh my gosh, I'm working for this The Bachelor now. And I saw your name and I had to call you right away. Like, you would be perfect for this. And I'm just considering it at this point. And I realized, okay, why not? It's 2020. It's the pandemic. There's not much happening in acting or events. I was working in model service, event planning, and acting and model. My industry was completely shut down. I don't know if we all remember how desolate those times were, but man, my routine was pretty stagnant.
Yeah.
I wasn't doing much at all. A walk in the park was the highlight of the day, which is pretty terrible.
The walks.
The walks. My gosh.
Okay. So you were like, you want to do this?
Yeah.
Why not?
This was the most exciting thing to come my way in a while. And I just realized, let's be a yes girl and do something out of the box. And so my friends and I went to Santa Barbara and we recorded the audition tape for The Bachelor because she wanted to show the other producers, even though she was like, I'm sure you're going to get it. And so we recorded this like really fun thing. It was such a fun and lighthearted experience in the beginning. And I loved it. Like the whole thing, being close to my best friends and being on the beach recording this like thing about love. And at the time I was just ready. I was healing from that toxic relationship.
Yeah.
I was ready to open myself to something new. My dating situation at the time, as I'm sure a lot of us were, was just like hooking up with guys from Bumble. Just so gross. Just so like, it was the same guy, but it was like so lackluster. It was just like, hey, want to come over and watch a movie? Okay.
Yeah.
It was the roundabout thing of this. It was like the
this
most romantic.
Romance. Yeah.
The most romantic thing that we did was Postmates Sweet Green and sit on my gross little roof with leaves and bugs everywhere and eat that. And then we went.
Yeah. But you were like, this mansion sounds like.
I was like, maybe The Bachelor is better. Yeah. And then they introduced like who it was going to be. And I really wanted to be a part of a monumental season, which unfortunately, in my opinion, like they really failed on. That was such a huge pivotal moment for Bachelor Nation, having the first Black Bachelor in a cast that was extremely diverse. Mm-hmm. Like 50% of us were non-white, mm-hmm. which is the first time mm-hmm. in Bachelor history that they had a non-white bachelor and non-white women like being a part of the majority. Mm-hmm. And that was such a failure on their part. And I cannot believe that they didn't take that further. To me, it was like a clownish season.
Tell me how. Tell me exactly how.
This is my personal opinion, obviously, but like they really had to hire the most pretty, sorry to use this term, and I know that it's a little bit more like outdated, but like the most whitewashed Black guy to represent Blackness in the time of BLM to me was just a disservice. It was almost, of course, they had to cater to the audience mm-hmm. of The Bachelor, which is predominantly like America, all the way spanning across America, not just liberals, but conservatives. And then they had to offer diversity, but then play no part in showing these different women's origins. Like, what about all the origin stories of how people prevail in a time of racial injustice? Like, what about the adversities of these like mm-hmm. diverse women? What about their life experiences? But instead, you want to make me get into a fight with some random bitch. Sorry. I'm sorry. What?
And it was so pretty. That we're pushing this.
I don't know what happened during my season, but it was not wholesome or fruitful in the way that I wanted it to be. There was such an opportunity to highlight like to Americans how diverse the world actually is and how much diversity comes with love or interracial couples or and not. Let's show those love stories. Instead, it was like, no, let's just show these women fighting so much about the cattiest things. And then let's bring this person onto the show and manipulate her, Victoria, into being like an actual clown of the season. Right, girl, but like you were. And it's just really sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. The opportunity was so missed.
Yeah. And you told me that, like, you gave her an opportunity to have an out of you. You took her aside and you were like, listen, let's stop doing this because there is this important message that we need to come mm-hmm. across. Like, it didn't happen.
Yeah. And I think that producers in reality shows overall, and this is something that everyone knows by now because there have been multiple podcasts revealing, like, how reality TV is constructed these days. But performance and entertainment is always going to be more important than the true message behind things because people like bad headlines. They want the drama. They want the nitty gritty. They don't want to know. We don't want to live our truth. We don't want to be faced with things that are important. I'm guilty of it too. Like sometimes you get overwhelmed with all the messages of mm-hmm. truth. You don't want to know that kids are starving all over the world. You don't want to know about the war and the crises all over the world and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I guess The Bachelor has been around for so long. It's like we know the formula and we understand what they stand for. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunately the message is not coming across. It feels like they're trying, but like you said, like it's being missed. You live that experience. And I think that's just like the reality of this franchise. And it's too bad. And it's too bad because I think you went on with the intention of, you told me you were like, I was that girl who thought I was going to find love on the show.
Yeah, I definitely had that intention. And I was open to it. And I think a lot of the women that go on that show do, because of course the producers are in your ear before obviously the show and the tapings and stuff. And I'm not saying that my experience is the generic experience of the Bachelor franchise. I think there are a lot of people who have great takeaways, obviously, mm-hmm. and find love. But it only happens for that one person or on each season or like the couples on Paradise. But it happens in a way where I think the love that is built is actually built on trauma bonds. And then can grow into something else later if they choose.
Good point.
It's forceful. It's weird. It's a weird way to find love and put yourself in that. And it's something I will never do again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You lived and you learned.
Yeah. Totally.
So you got eliminated in week two. And tell me about that experience of what does that like rejection feel like? When it airs, it's on a national scale. But in the moment, you feel you're like, I was eliminated week two. Tell me about that rejection.
The rejection is so grand because think of it this way. It's a visual reality of dating, right? Like a visual perspective. Like you're there with 30 plus other women that are vying for the same man. It's a little bit of a misogynistic playing field, right? Mm-hmm. It's like 45 women going after one man mm-hmm. in a night. And emotions are high and you're drinking champagne and you're on camera and you have this expectation of, I need to talk to this guy or else my whole chance. And this is built up over 6 months of getting ready and like buying all the clothes and packing and getting so excited and dreaming about how potentially this one guy could be like your soulmate or your Prince Charming. And then every girl feels that. So the energy is palpable. Like you're there and you're just like, whoa. And everyone's trying to look their best and act their best. And that comes with a lot of fakeness. There's a lot of like weird, can you imagine just running around this mansion and just like trying to chase this guy? These cameras are following you and you're just having these like pockets of conversation with other women who are also in a state of panic. Like otherwise they're going to get eliminated and all this stuff. And you have all these like preconceived notions of not just him, but the experience and who you should be on the show. And then the producers and all of it is just so crazy. I can't even tell you. It's an experience that not a lot of people will go through, and like for good reason, probably, because it's a really psychologically taxing like experience.
Did it make you question your worth?
100%. Because when you're young and dating in LA and otherwise, there's this like comparison model for women where we are often pitted against each other and valued for things that are not important, like our looks, right? But those are the things that get you places. What are the guys going to go for? And I think that the shallow aspect of meeting these women on the show for 3 minutes at a time, like you're not going to really have a good experience. So a lot of it's like initial attraction. And of course, that comes with, oh, how, of course, there's chemistry and things like that are involved. But it's like, how beautiful do you think this woman is? Mm-hmm. And so then you are in a state of fear because you're like, oh, shit, am I going to get eliminated because I'm not like his type?
Yeah.
Like it comes down to that. And then playing Tinder in person, like you were at Tinder.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's like, imagine being swiped left on in person on national TV. Like you travel across the nation sometimes for these people, which I did. I went to Pennsylvania. Like they shot it in this beautiful mansion in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And it was like, what the heck am I doing here? And it was like, we had this 3 minute conversation that was rootless.
Yeah.
And then I'm standing on the stage. My feet are like pulsing from wearing these heels that don't fit for 14 hours and waiting for my name to be called rose after rose. And it's like the high anxiety.
Yeah.
And then you're just so tired. Like you've been drinking champagne all night to try to get through it. And you're just so tired. But it's like 4 a.m. And then he finally calls your name and you barely hear it. And you just have to walk down there and hope you don't fall on your face in front of the cameras.
Right.
In front of the 10 cameras that are surrounding you. So the experience is jarring because it's not rooted in reality, as ironic as it is, like reality TV. It's not real.
Yeah.
It shakes you to your core and it makes you think, okay, like I'm not enough because I was called in this order. And then they edit it and then they call you in whatever order the viewers need to perceive you and to be successful for the show.
I see.
So it's like all that going through that is it really makes you very disoriented as a person. It actually detriments your love life, at least for me.
Yeah. So tell me about that. Tell me about what dating was like after. So you go home.
Yeah. I go home. I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, what the fuck, really? Like, why did I do that? First of all, I just wanted to be home. I'm going to share this like very sentimental and private part of my life, but basically my best friend, her dad committed suicide about a month before I went to film, and she's my best friend. We spent Christmases together, like, with her family, and she knows my family. We are very close, and she is like a sister to me, and so leaving her in that time for an experience like that was so hard on our relationship.
I'm sure.
It brought up a lot of, what does that mean for me and you? If she wanted me to stay, how selfish would it be on her part? And if I didn't want to stay, then how selfish is it for me on my part? And that was something I had to come home and confront on top of the psychological abuse of like being rejected on national TV by a show, by the way, not by a man, by a show, which is even worse, I think. Right. And so I come home to it and it's like the most pivotal part of my 20s, I think, dealing with all of that all at once.
So what did you do? Did you like enroll yourself in therapy?
Okay. So that's when I really sought therapy. I decided to take that very seriously. So I was paying for therapy out of my own pocket because health insurance sucks in America for twice a week because it was just so psychologically damaging. Not to mention, like, I wasn't over my toxic ex. I had parental traumas from my childhood that were just carried on through into my 20s that I never really dealt with. my best friend and I were really having issues with just communication and talking things out. And of course, we love each other so much and we're fine today. But that was the hardest part of our friendship ever. And we were like so close. And there were so many things coming up between us that made life so difficult. And then dealing with the pandemic. It's like when it rains, it pours.
But then you went on The Bachelor.
And then going on The
Bachelor. Humiliating. National scale.
And thankfully, like the way that I was interpreted, which is interesting to me because everyone's interpreted differently. And a lot of my followers, they came and rooted for the girl that The Bachelor edited me as, was this like really soft-spoken, patient, almost like submissive, docile character.
Yeah, because they wanted to amplify her being such a bully.
And I just realized as much as I'm not that person, she's not that person. Yeah. Tori isn't this like crazy bully as much as I'm not this like super submissive woman, which for me rooted back to like, why didn't you amplify an Asian voice? Why didn't you make her a strong character when you could have? Instead, you made her, which is fine. Like, of course, my patience and grace showed through, but it was like, why was it just that? Why didn't it show me fighting back? Because that's a lot of what the audience wanted. Like, Marilyn should have fought back, but then it was almost, we love her because she, how pitiful and how tragic. This woman didn't even get to really be on the show because this bully was overtaking her place or whatever. And all of that was just so messed up too, I think.
Yeah. If you were to give one piece of advice to someone who was like, I want to go on a reality show for love, or even I want to go on a reality dating show, period.
Do you know how many people have come to me for that rudimentary like advice? Because so many people now are, oh, hey, I know we haven't talked in 2 years, but can I like just call you for a quick chat? And I'm like, oh God, I swear to you, they're going to call me and ask if they should go on Love Island. And it always, and they're like, oh, so like this producer called me from Too Hot to Handle. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like guys, I can't be like the professor of knowledge when it comes to that. Whatever you want to do, that's your life experience. Do it if you want to do it.
Yeah.
Do it. Like one of my friends just called me. He's like, do you think I should go on a prank show? It's reality TV. I'm like, what the heck? That has nothing to do with what I went through.
Yeah.
I still don't know. Yeah. Like, there are so many friends who I know that have found love from that show.
Your season, they found love. They're
so
still
many,
together.
So many people from my season.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rachel and Matt are still together and they're so beautiful. But like a lot of their bond was created after the show. And like I have friends like Alana and Chris, like they met on Paradise and they're together and that's beautiful. And I really, they're coming to visit me actually. So I'm excited for them to come down and like really see how they're feeling now that everything's
like the Marilyn off camera.
And Alana and I are super close. Okay. Like we kept in touch after our season. We were each other's like emotional support buddies.
Yeah.
From all that drama.
Yeah.
So it's really nice.
So are you dating now?
So I have been noticing a pattern in my dating life where I'm like, okay, like I'm going to be really open and I'm going to go and I'm going to explore things. Okay. First, I'll be honest. After the Bachelor thing, I was like, okay, you know what? I'm ready for my hoe phase. I'm going to do this. I don't care. I'm going to be open. I'm going to explore my sexuality in a really explosive way. I don't care. I'm going to see if I like girls and guys and see every, I want to date everyone and talk to everyone. I want to open my profile and just be open.
Yeah.
And I did that and I was like, oh my God, no, that's not me.
How long did you do that?
I did that for a couple months, but it wasn't like as intense. Like I was trying to really put myself out there.
Yeah.
And it would never got to that point where I was like, I want to go to a sex party.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't, like on the day,
not
you know,
that far.
Yeah. So I think I was just broke out of my shell and I was like, I'm going to do everything to explore. Yeah. And then I realized, actually, no, you know who you are. Stop trying to put yourself in like weird boxes that make you uncomfortable. I was like, I'm going to date everybody. But then it was like, okay, you're still falling back to your like the unavailable men that you've been dating. So let's narrow it down and not have extra drama in your life. And so then it was like, okay, I'll be on Bumble and Hinge. And I even tried Tinder again, which is pretty desperate.
No comment.
Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, Tinder is cool. I was like, whoa, these people are off.
I met my boyfriend on Hinge. So I'm a big proponent. Better. Yeah.
Tinder is just like the common one, the first one. So you're really open to so many different people.
Yeah. People don't put their best foot forward on Tinder.
That's hasn't it garnered a
hookup stigma?
Yeah.
Yeah. That is the stigma. I think it's just if you go to the biggest bar in LA, you're going to see everyone.
Precisely.
If you go to a bar where only 28-year-olds to 35-year-olds go, you're going to probably find people who are looking for marriage. So it's really just
totally
matters who's on it.
Yeah.
But go on Hinge. I highly recommend it.
You're like, my contract's over. Go on Hinge.
So did you figure out like your non-negotiables of dating?
Yeah. So basically I decided, okay, I'm going to start doing the Hinge thing and all that. And so I dated a couple guys, again, hitting the very like unavailable men thing.
Okay.
And then so then I go into a retreat and I'm like, okay, no, I'm cutting everyone off, cut everyone off, cut the ties. Like, it's fine. I'm just going to work on myself. And then working on yourself gets old over a couple weeks. And you're like, oh, shoot, I really want some male attention or whatever, yeah. Which is totally like a weird thing to even want to date because of that.
Well, I think you just are like, okay, I worked on myself. Now let's like put me out there.
Yeah, but it does have to come from a good place. So that pattern kept happening where I was like, okay, I'm going to do it now. I'm open again. I'm going on dates. I'm open. Okay, cool. Never mind. You guys all suck. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of laming the male stereotype. Oh, fuck these fuck boys. Like having that in my head really, I think, disabled me from finding like a true person. And so now I'm back in therapy.
Twice a week or once a week?
Just once. Not that unhinged. Yeah. I'm on Hinge. I'm not unhinged.
That's going to be the episode name.
Yeah, that should. But yeah, hire me as your brand developer. You know?
Exactly.
But yeah, let's get back into therapy. Let's look at the roots of this and come from a more mature perspective, because every transition in your life, like I'm 29 now and I'm like, okay, I'm definitely different than I was when I was 25. So let's revisit who I want to be and what I want. And so right now, maybe I'm bipolar, girl, because right now I want that like dream of a family. And I'm like really considering, I am open to having one child, a daughter, hopefully one or two children with someone that I love that wants that too. And that's the first time in my life I've ever admitted that or wanted that or sought after that. It was always like, let's just go on this date and see where it goes. Okay, well, let's just like this guy and let's just date him. Yeah. It was never intentional. And so now I'm just reserving myself for somebody who wants that. And because I implemented that in my therapy and manifestations and meditations, it's like, everybody else that I was seeing fell to the wayside in such a monumental way. They were like, oh, I'm out. Like either they saw my energy or I saw theirs for who they really were. And it was like, okay, like we're clearly not right for each other. Right. So let's just never talk again. Right. And it's like those guys that had been bothering me for years, obviously the on and off of like toxicity and dating in LA for years, haven't even reached out at all.
Wow.
Which is crazy when you can change your mindset and be really intentional with your dating dynamic and your non-negotiables and your standards and like what you really want and meditate and journal on that, you can truly start dividing like a path in your life that you'd never been down before. So that's really where I'm at. It's exciting, unnerving, a little scary, of course, but I think it's like powerful.
I think the scariness is the uncertainty of finding that man. But if you have to stay true to the fact that you want someone with aligned life goals, you will find that person.
How did you find your person? You keep saying that you're in a healthy relationship, which I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
That's very rare.
I, too, did a lot of therapy after a toxic relationship. She told me when I went to therapy, she said, Julia, we just need to change your picker. Your picker. I also was going for the unavailable men. I liked confidence. I was mistaking confidence and cockiness. Mm. And usually cocky men are narcissists.
And actually very insecure.
Extremely. So I think every time I wanted to say that this guy was too sweet or too available to me, my therapist checked me and was like, bitch, get your shit together. And he is amazing. We have a lot in common. We have a lot of similar values. I feel very heard and understood by him. Wow. And I think I feel like I continue to be a better person with him. Mm-hmm. And that's a sign for me. I also really trust my gut. So when I sit and think about my relationship, I feel no anxiety in my gut. I just feel fine and safe.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
That's a spot that every person who is seeking a relationship, because some of us aren't, wants to get to. So that, congratulations, girl.
Thank you. Yours is next.
We'll see. I'll keep you
updated. But if you guys are listening and you're about 33, what's the age range?
I don't know anymore.
You're not, okay, you're not picky on that, but the non-negotiable.
As long as they're like just vibrant and youthful. It doesn't really matter what age, obviously. I'm sorry. Sorry to like older people. Maybe not like someone in their 50s.
Okay.
I want a similar age range.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just so because you want to have like similar interests, similar life paths.
And also just energy levels and different things. I've actually never really dated a super old guy. Have you?
No.
Of my friends are really into that. Like, like silver foxes and stuff.
Yeah. I can see that. If it was George Clooney, maybe. But
okay. Yeah. If he was like a super multimillionaire, rich, like actor, for sure.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Well, we're going to find him for you. I'm hopeful that I feel like with all your therapy and all your manifestation, mm-hmm.
I love that. And I love like the podcast name, by the way, before we sign off. I was going to say,
we're not signing off yet. We have a fun segment that we're going to play.
Yeah.
So we do this segment and I want to caution you that we're not authorities on celebrity relationships. Obviously, you and I have been to therapy ourselves. We've had some toxic relationships, yeah. But we like to play this game where we talk about whether this relationship you feel like it's good. And so it's called Trouble or Paradise. So whether it's like Trouble or Paradise.
Okay.
So I'm going to start us off. The first couple.
So we're like rating them.
I want to get your takes. I want to get your takes on whether this is a healthy relationship or not. Yeah. So I'm going to start us off. I felt like it'd be fun to do like a reality version because you were on a reality show.
Yeah. So funny.
So you're familiar with Chrishell Strauss and Jeeplet. Have you heard about them?
I know about Chrishell. I know that she's on Selling Sunset.
Yes.
I don't watch Selling Sunset. I've seen like clips of it on TikTok and stuff. And then the reason I know her is because one of my favorite shows, This Is Us.
Yeah.
Her husband.
Yeah.
Justin.
Hartley.
Yeah. He totally dissed her, but yeah. I don't know.
Now I think she's found her sexuality.
Which is awesome.
They're engaged.
And I love that.
I think they seem really happy and it seems really easy. And she's just like finding her stride and living her best life.
I don't know who Jeeplet is. I know that it's some type of influencer, right?
I think they're like a singer.
And they go by they.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yes.
So I don't know them like that. A singer. That's cool. I think finding your sexuality in a public eye, especially after a pretty like highlighted divorce, is really powerful. I don't know them enough, but like that in itself is just really powerful. And I think that will carry them through.
I agree.
Because, like I said, like I was trying to find my sexuality and not just put myself in a box after everything. Because I was like, maybe I am non-traditional. And it's like powerful to do that as a woman. Like you need to explore that before you shut it down.
Agree.
And I think that a lot of times we don't have the access to it or we're like scared to do it. Because when you're in a public eye, you don't want people to judge you. But it's that they're like pioneers in that.
Yeah.
And just... Yeah.
Yeah. I think so Chrishell and Jeeplet, paradise.
Paradise for sure. Hopefully they're getting married.
I don't know. Yeah.
We'll see.
Okay. This couple, I have some thoughts on. So what do you think about Kourtney Kardashian and Travis Barker? They just got married. They had their little gothic wedding.
Yeah.
In Italy.
That was, came out of the blue.
Yeah.
I think from what I've seen on the show,
her
show, they seem really in love.
I know.
They do.
I know.
And I'm wondering if it's like, love bomb-y a little bit because it happened fast, but I don't think
I said that they were friends first. Yeah,
that's actually good.
I think she was just in such a toxic relationship with Scott that she met this guy who's like healthy and loves her, and and they're really into it. I could do without the PDA. I don't know about you. What do you think?
The PDA, I think, is a little bit intense. I don't know why it's like that, but to each their own, I guess. Oh my gosh, that PDA. Like, imagine behind closed doors. I wonder if they're like the opposite. Like, behind closed doors,
they're
like,
they're definitely having crazy.
No, I know.
They're definitely.
Cool, though. I actually saw her at a spa recently. And it was funny, like, seeing her in person. And just, she's really reserved.
Yeah. No PDA at the spa. I guess she was alone.
Yeah, I think that he was probably in a treatment or something because it was the same spa that they're going to on the show.
Okay.
And actually, funny thing, I never watched that show before it was on Hulu because I hated the like formatting of the old show. I just thought it was so cheesy. But the new show is like better. I'm watching it sometimes, like if I'm bored, like in the background.
Yeah.
It is interesting, though, how far they've come as far as like media moguls in our society.
For sure.
So it's like almost if you don't watch that, you don't have much to talk about as far as it comes to pop culture.
That would be nothing without them.
I'm like,
so I feel like we have their paradise, but I just wish that it would stop like with the tongues, maybe.
Yeah. But you know what? I don't know if you feel this way as a Virgo, but I know that we're like deemed as judgmental people, but then I'm also like easily convinced of everyone's interests and intentions.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, I could see that. I could see why you want your tongue down his throat. You love him so much. So I'm like, yeah, I get it.
I don't know. I'm as easily convinced. But
maybe you should try it.
I should try it.
Yeah.
I should try. Okay. If you freak out.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Moving on to the last couple.
Okay.
Blake Shelton and Gwen Stefani. They met on The Voice. What do you think about them?
I like them a lot.
I know.
I really like The Voice because especially with Ariana Grande, one of my favorite singers, being on the last season. I was really into it. And I love Gwen. Her, like, love angel music baby, my high school anthem.
Yeah.
I loved her in high school. And I remember, like, rocking her in high school and, like, trying to copy her and Avril's style. So like that punky kind of style and just finding a lot of my identity in Gwen.
Yeah.
And just how rebellious she was. Like it helped me break out of the box and stuff. And then with Blake, he's such a goofball.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I
love
was surprised.
The dichotomy of like her being the cool girl and him being like the Western Catholic guy. I'm like, okay, you go, girl. Like,
yeah, that's cool. It's such a departure from who she originally was with.
Yes.
Was it like a tennis guy?
Gavin Rossdale. He was in a band.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know. I wish I knew this information. Like, I wish I knew math as well as I know this shit.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So, did he cheat on her?
I don't remember. Oh. I think it was just like a fallout of love situation, maybe.
My favorite song that she's ever written is called 4 AM. And it's like my anthem. If you are listening to this, you should listen to that song after this podcast. Because, and especially if you're listening to this, I'm sure you're going through some toxic relationship. It's a great toxic relationship jam really? To really get you out of a weird place. Or maybe to relate to music a little bit more when you're in that place.
For that, we love Gwen. We love a breakup anthem on this podcast.
I hope that they do well. I think she looks phenomenal, by the way. She's like 51.
I know.
It's actually unreal.
I know.
What's she doing?
There was three paradise.
That's good.
That's
maybe
good.
We're just very optimistic about love.
Very
right
optimistic
now.
Right now. Yes.
Right now. Like, talk to us in 6 months.
Well, I think that we're pretty much done here, Madeline.
I love that.
Tell us where we can find you. Tell us your handle.
Yeah, I am trying to be a little bit more public with myself on the interweb. I think I was thrown into that like whole thing and I never really did much with it. But I'm definitely going to start being a little bit more public with who I am in my life. I'm finally ready to share a lot of what I've been through in the last couple years after being on The Bachelor. So you can find me on all socials at Marilyn Sienna. That's MarilynSienna across all socials. So yes, hopefully we can see each other there. And thank you so much for having me. Like, this has been really fun.
Thank you.
And really hot, too.
So hot. But it was
really late.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Pretty Much Done. If you want more information about this episode, you can check our show notes. Go like, subscribe, and leave a review because it helps us grow the pod. Love you. Thank you. Sorry, did I just love bomb you? I'm not toxic. You are. Okay, bye.